This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. Joining me, as always, is my loyal and faithful co-host, Steve Smee.
Hey, guys. Almost to the end of July here. It's hot out there. Hottest week of the year in North America. We have a special guest on our show, Skip LaCour. How you doing, buddy?
I am awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks you so much for having me here.
So, Skip, the main reason I want to get you on the show is, first of all, I'm a big fan. I've been watching your Manformation videos and your podcast for a while. But I feel like most people don't really know your background. You know, they've heard the name Skip LaCour, they've seen your bodybuilding photos, but they don't actually know how you got into bodybuilding. Most people don't know that you actually worked at a grocery store
right,
you started. Yeah. So before we get into anything else, can you kind of give us your background? You know, what got you into this crazy sport of bodybuilding that, you know, we're all so passionate about?
Yeah, you know, I can tell you this, being in bodybuilding for 27 years, the reasons why I got into it are more clear to me now than maybe this, what I would have told you when I did get in it. You know what I'm saying? We learn more about ourselves, what drives us, our pains and our pleasures. So the answer I give you now would be a lot different of than when I got into it 27 years ago. You know, it's interesting that I started later. It's been 27 years. And I also started when I was 27 years old. So I wasn't one of the guys that just lifted weights in high school and then became a bodybuilder, teen bodybuilder, then in my early 20s. So I had already worked, you know, at that time, I was working up the ladder of a grocery store chain. It was 63 stores. It's a big company. I started there at 19 years old. Even that is a story because I went to an all-boys parochial Catholic school. Very sports oriented. I was the MVP of my basketball team. 97% went on to college, and my parents ran out of money, and the family was kind of in disarray. So, you know, I found myself working at the Sizzler restaurant. You know, that isn't how I saw myself. I saw myself as this all boys school parochial guy. I was all ready to go to college. I had my room, and now I'm on my own. Living in a one-bedroom apartment in my little car.
So where did you grow up? California or something?
I did. Sacramento, yeah. California, right.
Because you mentioned Sizzler twice, because I know there's all Sizzlers out there.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if they're around anymore, right? And so I was a very responsible 18, 19-year-old, and I was the manager there, managing other young guys working 60 hours a week. And what happened was one of the customers – just saw so much potential in me, wanted me to make the big jump to the grocery store. And that's why I worked for that chain for 25 years, grinding away a lot of promotions, a lot of night shifts, retail, and those type of things. But where it ended up, the promotion, I was the youngest manager in the chain at 27. And that was $115,000 US dollars at 27 years old, in today's dollars, okay, with all the security and all the safety and the 401k and the medical and dental and eye benefits, right? So, and I worked there for a total of 15 years. So it wasn't like that was just a regular old job. And so when I started bodybuilding, I said, let me just put all my passion, you know, into bodybuilding. It was something that it took a lot of courage for me to quit my job and go for my dreams, especially something like bodybuilding, right? And before that, I had joined a gym a couple times, you know, in my 20s. And back in those days, you know, there's a low entry fee for joining a gym these days. I don't know, you can get them for $100, $19.99 a month or whatever to get you in. Back in those days, you had to pay like $300, $400, $500, $1,000 to join a gym, you know, at that time. And I did that about two or three times before at 27, it stuck. And at that time, it was just head down. And you talk about falling in love with this crazy passion. That's when it happened for me. Before that, I didn't know anything about bodybuilding. As a matter of fact, I dated a girl about 3 years before who worked at a Gold's Gym. She used to talk about Gold's Gym and like a bodybuilder talked. And I don't think I was as interested in her as she wanted me to. And I think that was some type of leverage. Like I should be worried about a bodybuilder talking to her or whatever. That's how naive. Is that it? Is this a big deal? You know what I mean? That had no effect. I knew nothing about bodybuilding. As a matter of fact, she had a Muscle and Fitness or a Flex on her sofa, on her coffee table. And I remember looking at us going, who would want to look like these NOL guys, right? And again, that was about 3 years or so before I moved to a new city for that grocery store. Didn't know anybody. And so I had a lot of idle time. Had a guy really persistent. He wanted me to join a gym. And that was even strange too, because, you know, I always had a good body, right? Genetics played a huge part in this, but I didn't work out and, you know, work on the deltoids or this and that. And I remember he really wanted me to join, and I really don't know why. I think it was like a free t-shirt or something that he got. He was really persistent. And I just remember we were playing basketball. He goes, you know, your body, you know, you got good arms. And he was picking apart my calves versus my waist versus my back. I remember going, this guy is weird. I mean, who looks at a human body that way, right? And at that time, I had the cement weights, you know, in the backyard of an apartment. And I said, I have weights. But anyway, I joined, and it was just head down for 27 years.
So Skip, you definitely have a different story than, you know, most bodybuilders we interview. Right, right. Most bodybuilders, they started weight training in high school for athletics. You know, they found their love for the weight room, and they kind of like put athletics on the side and then pursue bodybuilding. You know, that's 95% of the bodybuilders we interview. What do you think it was that, you know, when you hit 27, that it just hit you when, you know, you went to a gym a couple times before and, you know, you didn't really have much interest. What do you think it was that, you know, that age 27, that the bug struck and it really like took you by the thorns?
Right. Right. Well, again, I'm going to give you insight of a guy who's 27 years older, who knows a lot more about life, who's been entrenched in our culture for 27 years, helping out thousands of people, you know, as a writer, as, you know, being a leader. And I just wanted to say one thing is that that isn't the commonality of why we're here. That's what everybody thinks, you know, the high school and worked out in sports. And then, you know, I'm telling you, the reason why I got into it is the same reason why, regardless if they understand it, why the vast, vast majority of us get into it. And it doesn't matter if it's a steroid bodybuilder, drug-free bodybuilder. I'm telling you, this is a breeding ground for people who like to depend on themselves. You know, that maybe whatever reasons. Now, again, many of us aren't aware necessarily. Some people might disagree. But it's like you'll hear this all the time, that things happen. Maybe they got picked on, right? They didn't feel in control. They break up their family. They like to do things themselves. And you'll hear that in people's stories all the time. They'll say, I don't like the team thing. I don't like people letting me down. Some even go as far, I don't want to let anybody else down. I mean, now that I say that, is that story pretty common? Is that your experience of what you've noticed a lot of people's backstories?
I definitely had a similar experience to your story. You know, my dad's a pastor. Yeah. So very, very stern father, very stern, kind of like military-like father. I was kicked out when I was 18, and I was forced to grow up really fast, just like yourself. Uh-huh. What I actually did is I was putting myself through university. I had a chemical engineering degree. Uh-huh. And I actually managed a nightclub. So just like, you know, I was 18, I was managing a 50 staff nightclub, you know, lots and lots of responsibility. You know, I'd be at school, you know, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then I'd go to the nightclub and work till 4 a.m. Like it was crazy. Uh-huh. So, you know, I had a lot of responsibility and I was forced to grow up fast. And the reason I got into bodybuilding is I was that type A person. I really loved to see how much I could push myself. Uh-huh. You know, and I like that we're in such little control of our lives when it really comes down to it. You know, we like to think we're in control, but we don't have much control over our lives when it really comes down to it, you know. And what you can control is what you put in your body, how your body looks. And I love that high, you know, seeing my body transform and knowing it was not what anyone else did. It was my own work. Right. And that's what I really loved about it. And like, obviously, yeah, you know, when you're 18, you want to look good. And when you get the compliments from the girls, you know, that's always a plus. And now I'm 25. So, I mean, I'm I've been bodybuilding for 10 years and I'm still younger than when you even started.
Right.
Now, you know, I care about the heart health and those things as well. But yeah, I mean, like for me, I just love pushing myself every day and almost that sick pleasure of seeing how hard you can push yourself before you snap.
Yeah. You know, there's the human spirit. We're very complex souls, you know, and coaching people to become their best, reading hundreds of articles on the internet. And, you know, I talk about, you may know the story is that I went to all Tony Robbins seminars. I staffed at his events. I was kind of his bodyguards at events. As if you were to look up Skip LaCour and Tony Robbins, you'll see about 20 years ago, so you're probably like 5 years ago, but back in those days, there was these things called infomercials, right? And he would sell his product, Personal Power. You may have heard about it. It's a series of audios. And he chose me to represent a commercial, an infomercial that ran for 3 years all over the world. You know, and my story was that with his work, I quit my safe and secure job and I went on to be a leader in bodybuilding. Yeah, so you could check that out. You know, if you put Google and, you know, YouTube, Skip LaCour, Tony Robbins, and you'll see that segment again. So it's been my first passion. That started at 21. Bodybuilding started at 27, like I mentioned. And so I've been fusing both of them together. It wasn't until I retired that I really had an understanding of all of us in this culture and our commonality. You know, I'll tell you, I've heard your story a lot. A lot of times what happens, and I don't know if this is your story, it's usually stuff that happens a little bit earlier, right? So I'm curious in your situation, did you move around a lot with your dad as a pastor?
What? Yeah, Trevor, unmute your, we can't hear you.
Sorry, I had my mic on mute so you can't hear me when I'm talking.
Okay.
So I'm Christian. In Catholicism, when you're a pastor, it's a full-time role. In Christianity, a pastor is a volunteer position. So my dad's also a math professor.
Okay.
So before he got tenure at the University of Alberta, we did move, you know, every 2 or 3 years because no university wants to give you a permanent teaching contract. They'll give you a 2 or 3 year teaching contract.
Right.
So I was born in Ottawa. Then we moved to Germany. Then we moved to Minnesota. And then we moved to Edmonton, Alberta, where he finally got tenure.
Yeah. How was that for you always having to switch? Not what you remember now, but back then. Sometimes that can really... the base of certainty, and I've worked with a lot of clients
honestly,
you know, that are in bodybuilding. Yeah.
What really happened because of that is I was never picked on. Like I was never really bullied or anything.
Sure, sure.
Because I was always moving every 2 to 3 years, I didn't really have any close friends.
Right.
I was kind of that kid in the back of the class that no one really spoke to, but they weren't mean to either. You know, I was kind of just like almost like invisible to most people because they didn't really get to know me. Like I was there for 2 years and I was gone. So it was, I think what I really liked about the bodybuilding was the attention I got out of it and, you know, something I could do myself. You know, like it's really hard to, you know, get into sports and things when you're moving every 2 to 3 years.
Sure, sure, yeah.
That's what I liked about bodybuilding was, you know, I'd basically move, get a gym membership at a local YMCA and I'd, you know, it'd take me a week to learn the new equipment. I was basically back to the races.
Right, right. Yeah, it sounds like you made the best out of your situation. I've worked with a lot of men. All driven, you know, we have our mutual interest of passion and they have a similar story and that always not being able to dig in and having that continuity, they didn't have such a positive sense about it. They always saw the breakup of their friends. They didn't get close to people because they knew another move was going to come. I don't know if a lot of guys handle it as well as you did. And so what happens a lot of times, and I know my situation too, if you're in a situation of breakup of family, you don't have anyone to count on, you become a self-soother, right? You have this thing where, you know, we kind of go away and we know how to take care of ourselves because we have to. It's the perfect breeding ground for an achiever, and not just with bodybuilding training, a person who can tuck themselves away and it's you versus you and dot every I and cross every T. Right now, with that is a tremendous amount of discipline where other people need connection, they need approval. You know, you can put your head down and it's you versus you. It's a very admirable quality. The challenge sometimes is there's with it, whatever route you take in life, you know, there's always an upside and a downside to it. It's being conscious of what we're doing, why we're doing it, and you know, taking the good, bad. But it's a conscious choice. It isn't like we have a tough time connecting, right? And we have no reason why. But we have a great sense of disconnection, our focus. We don't need people. That's what makes us more disciplined. If you really think about a lot of the people who you help with fitness, a lot of them they care less about what people think. They can put their head down and get the job done. Where other people who you try to help, it's that, you know, that connection, that sense of community. They can't do it. I mean, they could do it. Right. So it's an interesting thing there in our bodybuilding, you know, and again, this is a lot of life experience. This is talking thousands of hours to really hundreds of men through intense one-on-one coaching. I really believe I'm in a unique position with that 33 years in personal development and then 27 years as a leader in fitness. I've got big plans of what I want to accomplish to help us become the best we can be with our physical bodies.
Skip, you know, I do listen to your podcast. So, you know, listening to your podcast has really helped me self-reflect. Uh-huh. And one problem with, you know, people like me who are kind of, you know, those lone wolves is it's really hard for me to let people in, you know, and because I've been like that for so long, I almost have a little bit of like a loner personality. Like,
sure.
You know, it's very hard for me to date people, you know, it's very hard for me to develop close friendships.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of, it's catch 22. It's a positive in a lot of ways in sure. that I'm extremely successful. I'm extremely driven. You know, I'm 25, you know, I've already got a degree. I'm working on my master's.
Right.
You know, like I've accomplished so much at my age, but at the same time, I'm always working, you know, like I'm almost scared to fail. Like that's the truth of it. I am
sure.
Scared.
Sure. You know, I just want to tell you that is probably more common than you probably realize. And again, those qualities are the qualities of an achiever. You know, I'll take you back this is 1996, the Virgin Islands, where I don't know, are you a Tony Robbins fan? Did you watch his Netflix, I'm Not Your Guru? Did you happen to see that on personal development?
Yeah, I used to see you. You're in your infomercials for sure. I remember.
Okay.
But Trevor was probably too young.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's, right. That's before my time. I'm only 20. Yeah.
Right. No, but Tony Robbins has a show. It was released last year, a documentary on Netflix. It's called I'm Not Your Guru. You might want to check that out. Really interesting.
Skip, I'm gonna be dead honest with you. Uh-huh. I haven't watched an episode of TV or watched a movie in probably 5 years.
Okay.
I think the last movie I watched was probably in my engineering English course that I was forced to watch. And it was... It was supposed to be like a inspirational movie, but uh-huh. The guy ends up dying in a bus. I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's a pretty famous movie.
This is one of his seminars, personal development. I know you're into personal development, right? And so the reference, just to, you know, kind of go back to your point, I remember I was in the Virgin Islands. This was a $5,000 seminar, very intense. And I remember him saying, and this, I kind of understood this more after I got out of the intense bodybuilding focus world, because when you have that to go to, it, you know, it takes up 95% of your brain, and joyfully, it's a great place to go to calm the chatter, to give you direction, give you that control that you talked about. You know, everybody wants more control. All of us, we want to believe that there's a cause and effect, that if we did this, we want to believe that we can control our outcome, right? The worst thing in the world is the metaphor of we're just a rickety old ship with no sail or torn sails and a little rudder and an oar, and the waves are just rocking us around and we have no real control if we're going to live or die. It's just, we hope that the waves die, weather gets better, but it's really not up to us. That's most people's worst nightmare, that they're not in control. And so control is that we all need at some varying degree, some more than others, especially if they didn't feel that they had that control growing up. You want to seize it. You want to be in positions where you're in control a lot of times. And again, it's not black or white. but they're different varying degrees. I'll tell you, the more you crave control, you want to keep control. It's a perfect breeding ground for an achiever, and especially a bodybuilder too, for all the reasons why you mentioned. But like you said, you know, with every direction you go, with every mindset, there's positive things. You're enjoying all the positive things. And, you know, I'm curious, is at this point, you're still young, is that connection. That's one of our needs too. Again, that's something that we don't necessarily need. Everybody does need it equally. And you know what? I'm happily married and I've got two little ones, and I worked very, very hard to get over my particular trust issues for my story to get to this place. It took me a lot of work, took me a lot of enlightenment, and it really took me, I had to retire from competitive bodybuilding, get out of that repetitive behavior, that being rewarded for that repetitive behavior before I could start attacking other challenges that I have. We all have challenges. And so I'm just curious. I mean, do you want that connection? How is this going to evolve? Are you okay with it? You know what I mean?
So I do eventually want to get married, Skip, you know, assuming I meet the right woman, of course. Like I would never get married just for the sake of getting married.
I'm sure, not one. Sure.
You know, I'd rather be alone than with someone who isn't a good fit for me. Can I ask when you got married and when you found your soulmate, so to speak? Cause I know, Steve, he's a little bit later, he's almost 40 and he's only found, you know, a woman he really likes now. I'm so busy. It's hard for me to date, but you know, I would date assuming the right woman comes into my path. But I think it's really hard to meet people now because I mean, when you're at the gym, everyone's got their headphones in, you know, you can't really talk to your girlfriend there or you're a creep hitting on her. Yeah. I'm doing my master's now. And once you get higher and higher in academia, you know, your classes get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
You know, and everything's online now, you know, like people don't really go to the mall to shop anymore and you don't really meet people that way because everyone orders everything online. So when did you get married and how did you meet your current wife?
Well, let me say my experience was a lot different. The thing is, I had plenty of women to date, all right? But again, I had these trust issues that I didn't understand. I kept people at a distance. Again, it kind of starts from childhood. Then, you know, you give as little as possible. You make choices that make sense. I see this play out on social media all the time. I've got a Facebook page that has 5,000 hardcore muscle people on it, right? I don't know exactly how that happened. Very few are friends. And, you know, they talk about the relationship challenges all the time. It's very common that, you know, if somebody, they don't agree with your lifestyle, right? Your bodybuilding training lifestyle. And they make these assumptions that the other person hates you, they're jealous of your body, you know, whatever. You've heard those things, right? In the bodybuilding world, right? You know?
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually going through that right now with my current girlfriend, actually. She's so fucking defensive, like, over everything. You know? I she asks me questions and I answer them, and she doesn't like the answer, so... She'll ask me, you know, about eating this or drinking this, and I tell her. So,
yeah,
it's hard, because especially women, they seem to assume just because you're into fitness that you're like an authoritarian when it comes to, you know, diet and nutrition.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm going to control what she does, and it's just like I don't give a shit what you do. You do what you do.
Right.
I don't need you to come to the gym. I don't need you to do all this stuff. Yeah. So it's kind of like it's hard. It's hard in that situation to.
And your story is very common. I see that a lot. You know, I take this role, all right, as being, you might see it, the buff dad you never had, right? I've really embraced my role of, you know, being the fit example. And, I have a lot of life experience that I can share, but I can tell you this, in a lot of ways, going through the journey, maybe having some thoughts like yours, time and wisdom and experience, and then cracking the code, has given me a lot different experience. And I do not see it the same way as what you're going to read on the internet from our fitness people. You know, I'll speak from my experience. Okay, this is my experience and is that, you know, I had trust issues, breakup of family, abandoned dad, all these type of things, but that was just normal to me. right? I played sports or whatever, but you know, I didn't understand that I wasn't really trusting people. I kept them at arm's distance. What I've really realized is that for me, it wasn't just a matter of, it wasn't a matter of if someone was going to eventually let me down. It was just a matter of when, because people are like more trusting. They assume good things are going to happen. Without me knowing it, I always assume the end. Now, it's not a conscious thing, and I'm always looking for it. So I'll have this confirmation bias, this cognitive dissonance setting in that I'll paint a story in my head, and everybody will eventually fail. I had a lot of great people in my life, a lot of loving girlfriends, but they could only last one contest preparation season, right? They would meet me, they'd admire, they think it's cool. And then, man, I was focused. You know, I know a lot of people think they're dedicated, right? I didn't achieve what I achieved. I had a great genetics. I backed it up with a lot of things, and I worked hard, right? Genetics don't take you as far in being talking about it 27 years later, right? And I was focused. And they're just, you know, the way I see it, the way I saw it then, I wasn't one of those guys thinking every single girlfriend had a problem. They're just jealous. They, you know, I don't think I went to that extreme. But part of it was because another girlfriend always come along that would do the same type of thing. That fed into my trust issues. That fed into me keeping people at arm's distance. You know, what I've learned over that time is that, you know, a healthy girl, right? Just think when you guys have daughters and things like that, right? And there's this guy who's a great guy, a lot of potential, and he likes to detach himself. He likes to focus, right? For whatever reasons, what reasons he doesn't know or whatever, right? And he wants your daughter to just, when he's done with that, because it's important to him, then she has his undivided attention, whatever schedule that is, right? See, the thing about it is what I've learned about me is that a lot of bodybuilding was calmed from chatter in my head. It was a very welcomed thing that I needed in my life, that structure, that sense of control. I understand it more now. But that's not her problem, okay? That's not her problem that I need to do this repetitive behavior and accomplishment to make myself feel whole. And when I'm done, then I am ready to give to her, okay? This is the way that I see it now. And I go, you're not going to hear this on any message board or any social media that's dominated with muscle people, okay? And the thing is, what I realized is that, you know, I'm a good guy, you know, carry myself well, that I attracted a lot of women. But now I see that the more healthy girls who are, you know, a person, you know, that was more their match, maybe had an upbringing that was more their match, they naturally gravitate towards guys like that. And, you know, it just wasn't a match. And so what happened was I would get, you know, great girls just like me, great person, you know, whatever, the best intentions. But I'm going to attract somebody who has my same challenges that wants things at a distance too. Now you got two people that prefer, I'm busy, I got to do this. You know, they're not close and warm. And what I found that happens, and you'll see this, whatever, is that you want that person to be all warm and all ready when you're warm and ready. Okay. But you've attracted your match and she's got her distance. She wants to do her thing, whether it's, you know, what you might justify, you know, your PhDs or your career. Oh, I must do it. Well, she has her reasons. You know, I dated girls that, you know, hey, look, before I met you, I went out with my girlfriends and not out to clubs, but to dinner 3 nights a week. That's the way I do it. Right. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why am I, or why would I be in a relationship like that? But that distance was comfortable for her and it wasn't a match for me. And see, that's the challenge, is that one person wants comfort and to turn to and listen to. And you got these two small gaps of time when you really think about it, they don't match up, right? So the openness, the readiness is on, it never matches up. And they're both pointing at each other for each other's faults.
Skip, what you're saying is really hitting home, because I'm very, very busy. You know, my schedule is jam-packed, you know.
And that's a choice that you're making.
It is a choice that I'm making. Right. And Like, I was just like you, you know, I have lots of girls who want to date me. Like, if I wanted to go on a date, I could have a date tonight.
Right.
But my problem is my schedule is jam-packed. Like today, for example, I went to the chiropractor first thing in the morning. Then I was at the university. I had meetings all throughout the day. Then I had to meet with the company I'm doing the research for my master's project with. Then I had 2 hours to go to the gym. Then I had to race home and record this podcast with you. Then I have a free hour, and then I'm going to catch up on client emails and go to bed. So I basically want someone who's available in that free hour.
Right, right,
but
right.
The girls I'm attracted to, they're just like me. They're that type A overachiever, and they've got their own schedule.
Right, right, right.
3 hours in this morning, and I'm like, no. I got this meeting in that hour, and then I'm like, well, I don't have time for you. And then she's like, well, I don't have time for you. And I think another thing is psychologically, I think I'm scared to let someone in because
Sure. When
I was growing up, my parents never really had time for me. Like my dad, he's just like me. You know, he's a math professor. He runs his own successful business. He's a pastor. My mom was an executive at IBM.
Yeah.
Both of my parents, they would wake up, they'd leave the house at 6 a.m. and I wouldn't see them until, you know, 9, 10 p.m. at night.
Right.
I had a nanny who basically raised me.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think, you know, I'm scared that if I date someone, they're kind of going to forget about me. Mm. But one question I have for you is, so you said, you know, people like me, you're type A people who really want something that they're in control of, drive to bodybuilding. Why would they drive to bodybuilding instead of another sport where in bodybuilding, pretty much the number one factor of whether or not you're successful is your genetics, which is something you have zero control over. So think about that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good question. And I think that it's very interesting. I think that most bodybuilders, Phil Heath may be an example, Mr. Olympia, Ronnie Coleman, you know, I think very few were really athletes. I mean, high level athletes, right? And really, I think the entry level, you work out, you look like an athlete. It's a very low bar, and bodybuilders like to call themselves athletes, right? That's athletes is something when you're growing up as a boy, it's a really treasured thing, right? If you really think about it, the entry bar to be an athlete, what you got to train for 5 years, right? Even less than that, and you're a bodybuilder. I'm an athlete. I want the show. So the question is why bodybuilding? I'll tell you. I think it has less to do with, like, you're kind of put it in the athletic category. They're choosing to be a pro baseball. I mean, rephrase the question. I want to make sure I didn't assume the question that you asked.
What I'm asking is, like, you're saying, you know, like, generally people who like me,
right,
kind of like that lone wolf, they want something that they're in control over, and that's right. Why, you know, they're kind of driven to bodybuilding, and that's the path they take. But in bodybuilding, the number one factor when it really comes down to it is genetics. So
yeah,
why instead of bodybuilding aren't they driven to, you know, something like CrossFit or something like, I don't even know, maybe something not even athletic, you know, maybe something like chess, where,
well,
like
they are right. And that's some of the, you know, or my distinctions and things like that. It's very common. It's bodybuilding is one activity, but it's very true with people. I call it the template mentality. Okay, so with bodybuilding, I mean, we like to, within our circles, like to, you know, quibble over, you know, 1 ounce protein or 2 ounces protein and have 3 hour podcast on protein or something like that. But really, it's eating more, eating less, moving more, lifting heavy things. You know, you know, whether you do the 5x5 split or this or that, it's all the same thing. It's a structure, it's discipline, it's timing, you're in control, right? It's a template. You know, when you follow a template in life, you can only be so happy. The good stuff is outside the template. But it's not that type of personality. It's not just bodybuilding training. It's other templates like military, right? All you have to do, they tell you what to do, when to show up, and you get promotions. You just put your head down and work within the template. You do a great job, you get promoted. People admire you as you go up the rank in military. It's a well-respected thing, just like with fitness. If you're fit, you're unique, right? And you're admired for that level of discipline. You know, 40-year-olds getting, I mean, you probably are sitting next to some 40-year-olds getting their third master's degree, you ask them, well, what are you going to do with that degree, right? And they don't even know. Am I right? Do you know anybody like that pushing 40?
Well, the biggest joke is I have a chemical engineering degree, and my end goal is to, you know, get a PhD and be a professor. You know, I really, really love teaching. You know, I love sharing my passion with people. Financially, it makes no sense, because I would make more money working in industry as an engineer than I will as a professor with tenure. So, you know, anyone on the outside looking in is like, this guy's a moron. You know, like, why does he start working now, work up with a big company, eventually, you know, get like a $500,000 per year salary once he's been with that company 20, 30 years. Why are you wasting 7 years of your life to get a PhD, to get a teaching position so you can make less money? You know, that's what the average person thinks. And yeah, it's the same thing, you know?
Well, what is your answer to that, right? I know why. I'll entertain you some things. You know, I think all of these emotions, it's complex. There's not black and white answers, but why is that important to you? And not getting the $500,000.
Life is too short to do something you're not interested in. Okay. I did the co-op program. So how that works is basically in the summers you work. So, you know, I worked for PCL, I worked for Sandril, I worked for CT Engineering Associates. I worked for some big engineering companies. And, you know, it really, doing that work, those work terms really hit home to me. Because, you know, I looked at everyone I was working with, all, you know, the senior engineers, and they all drove BMWs and Mercedes. They all had, you know, cottages. They all had fancy boats. They had all the toys. Uh-huh. They all had, you know, children with three different women. They were all playing child support. They were all kind of miserable, and they were basically just working to pay for their toys. And then they would buy a new toy to try to make themselves happy. But, you know,
now, there wasn't one person that was happy in there. There wasn't one person that was happy in there.
Very, very few. Most people are just there for the money. And I even asked, because like I'm in Canada, remember? So the only real industry we have where they're going to hire a chemical engineer is oil. So I even asked my boss, I'm like, are you truthfully interested in designing distillation columns and oil refinery plants? Like, does this stuff actually interest you? Because like, I'm going to be dead honest with you. Like, I'm sitting at my desk waiting till 5 o'clock every day. And he said, you know what? Truthfully, it doesn't interest me. And I said, well, why are you here? And he said, the money. And, you know, like that's basically what he said. And
yeah, let me give you some buff dad you never had advice, some insight, perspective, things for you to entertain, okay? Here's the biggest challenge with money. Money is an emotion. It's an exchange of emotion. I don't want to sound all woo-woo here, right? Everybody has a different definition and a different meaning for money based on our personal experiences. Money, we all have a relationship with money. It's all different. Based on different stories, right? When people say, hey, this is what you do with your money, why don't you do this for money? It means something different to them than everybody they're talking to, but we all think we look at money the same way. It's just the emotions that we want most in our life, right? That's all that money is. It's not the pieces of paper. It's not the ones and zeros on your computer screen. It's the emotion that we ourselves, with our unique story, what we want most. And I'll even add a different wrinkle into it. It's not the positive thing that we say we want most. It's just the opposite. It's what we fear most, what we want to get out of or stay out of most. That's what drives us. Money is the emotion. And it affects all our decisions, all our behavior, right? So when your professor says, you know, for you, it's living with passion. It's putting your head down. It's accomplishing something. It's achieving something. And he's saying, I do it for the money. Well, you know, I could probably go into his story and maybe his family was poor. Maybe his dad was an entrepreneur, took a lot of risk, right? And they felt the pain growing up. Maybe family is the everything in the world to him because it wasn't at home and he was going to have it different. And money to him, it's just safety, security. I don't want to have my brain. My dad was an entrepreneur. We had so many hard times. He was checked out most of the time. That's what I want to stay away from most. I'll take a job and I'll take its stability because I don't want to use. We only have so much willpower, focus, energy, and time. We only have so much battery. He says, good for you. Go ahead. change the world, right? If you want to put your willpower, focus in, I'm going to save some for my kids. I'm going to read to them at night. I'm going to keep a steady home, whatever. So that's when you're saying, I do it for the money. He might be saying, and I don't know his story, right? I want safety, security, predictability. I want to save my batteries to look into my kids' eyes. I didn't have that. I do not want them to suffer what I went through, and I'll do anything to do it. And if it's take a job that isn't using all my creativity, energies, and stretching myself, that's okay with me. I want to give that to my wife and kids. I want to provide for them what I never even had. But he's saying money, something that is not important to you at this age, but we still use the word money, right? So even like with you, you don't want the Lamborghini, the things like that you talked about, but that guy's Lamborghini, that's his plastic trophy. That's his muscles. It proved to him that he's capable, that he doesn't have to live out, that he's arrived, that he's not the nerd that people, the people that ignored him or bullied him or whatever. He's arrived and he focused on that. And that's what he attaches to the meaning to the money that bought the Lamborghini, right? You could do with less money because this route that you're going, that pays you your currency, your money, right? Money is just an emotion. And we make our decisions of what to do, what not to, what to buy, how much money to earn based on that. We all have a different story. I mean, obviously, everybody, all the willpower, focus, energy, and time that goes into bodybuilding, it probably doesn't surprise you that most people who are dedicated to the lifestyle kind of really suffer, whether they want to admit it or not, financially. A lot of times in relationships, because I'll tell you, if they're not, you got to crack a code to make money. Nobody just gives it away. You got to crack a code to have deep, meaning relationships. It doesn't just come to you, right? There's a code to crack for the best things in life, and if a vast majority is sucked up with willpower, focus, time, and energy to your bodybuilding training, you're not going to have it all, right? And you hear this a lot of times with bodybuilders, and this is a dilemma. It's a box that we'll put ourselves in. You'll say, you know what, why don't these people just work out? It's just an hour a day. You know why? I just can't understand them. I mean, we're talking about smart people. They may make $1 million. They may have a great family. They may make $1 million and have a great family, but they don't attach, even though they say they should, to do what they should by working out and eating right. They know that they should. They're obviously disciplined because, I'll tell you this, if you said this to a fitness person, why are you broke? Why don't you have relationships? What's your excuse, right? A fitness person would go nuts if someone said that. Oh, it's hard. I can't do it. You know, people are this way. Money isn't important. That same fitness person, but Hood's willpower, focus, energy, his trophy, the meaning that he puts on life is wrapped up into whatever it means to him, why he has those muscles, why he goes on a journey. And that's okay, right? Yet, when smart souls that are can't, you know, and I see it, like rich guys with great families and they have this big billion, I'm going, damn, you know, just a little bit, right, on it. But all of us could have all the money and all the happiness and all the relations we want too. It's like what you put your focus on, right? And so this is the trap that a lot of bodybuilders put themselves in. Okay, it's just an hour a day. There's no excuse not to work out and eat right. Okay, fine. So if a person came up to them who was fat, you know, maybe they have great relationships and they make a lot of money and they have all the financial security and all the options that the bodybuilder guy doesn't have, right? And if that person said, oh, it's easy for you to look that way, right? What would the bodybuilder say?
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating, your perspective. So, Skip, we only have 10 minutes left.
Okay.
I kind of wanted to end the show with this. You seem like a really stand-up guy, and I know you're a natural bodybuilder. And, I mean, I believe you. I mean, why would you lie? My question is, I've always wondered this, because there's so many guys, like, on YouTube and stuff who claim they're natural and stuff. And I've always
claim I am natural, they claim I'm not natural.
No, they claim that they are.
Right.
Or they'll say you're not, or this guy isn't, okay. You know, yada, yada.
I get it.
But I'm curious, from your perspective, Why personally did you decide not to use performance enhancing drugs? I'm assuming you use supplements. I'm assuming.
Sure. Yeah.
But why did you not take that leap to use steroids? Because Trevor and I mean, we talk about steroids on our podcast all the time. And a lot of our members, you know, they found the site because they're looking for a source or whatever.
Right.
I feel like in the gym, 70-80% of guys in any decent gym are juicing or have juiced in the past year or two. So
following up on Steve's question, I think what he's trying to get at is
what was my story that led to my decision? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like why wouldn't you juice? Because you have such a great body. I'm just curious, if you were to add steroids to the equation, you have the genetics, you have obviously the drive to do it. You know how to eat, you know how to train, because you have like some huge biceps. I mean, your biceps are incredible.
It's an illusion. I know that, right?
Why wouldn't you have taken that next step to do it? Because I'm trying to see, opinion.
What Steve is asking is how did you skip the allure of it? You know, like as bodybuilders, I know myself personally, I spent so much money on supplements throughout the years. You know,
right.
I read a Flex magazine and there was a flashy ad, and you know, it promised that I was going to gain this amount of muscle, this amount of body fat. I literally that day rode my bike to the nearest supplement store. Where is the supplement? How do I take it? How much is it? Here you go. I want to try it.
Yeah. Let me give you the best answer, because we all have our unique stories. Even attaching so much value on that body, or, you know, I've never put IFBB Pro on any of my Facebook status. I don't even do that in my name. I've never valued IFBB Pro. Let me kind of tell you. Number one, 27 years old. I didn't even take recreational drugs. So, you know, kind of being there and then doing that, that would have been a jump for me. Here's the other thing. I'd started when I was 27. I had a responsibility, right? So I wasn't just a gym guy, right? When I won a show after 13 months, and it was like this Mr. Fremont. And that was a kind of a big deal in this little town in California. Actually, Ed Corney was the first Mr. Fremont. But I had only been training for 13 months, so I didn't know the whole culture. And so I'd be working at the grocery store, and then people would be like, that's Mr. Fremont. That's Mr. Fremont, right? I was going, wow, this bodybuilding is kind of people think this is a big deal. So I never cherished it in the way, the muscles, the title, the trophy. Okay, so that's the first thing. Now, the second thing is that it's timing. Because if I would have started like a year or maybe even 2 years earlier, steroids were not even a controlled substance. When I worked at that grocery store, there was a pharmacy. There was tons of big guys who went back there that obviously were probably getting steroids, but it was, I didn't think twice about it. I wasn't into the culture. I didn't think about it. This is what the young guys need to understand about those older guys. It wasn't a big deal to get steroids. Right when I got into it, I had this person could see my potential. She wrote for muscular development at the time. She lived locally. She goes, you know, you could be a pro bodybuilder. I said, wow, really? Because I was just like everybody. I was in the mag, you know, I was into the magazines and everything like that. And I said, hey, do bodybuilders make a lot of money? And she laughed, right? Because they, you know, what you see now, like Phil Heath making $300,000 or $500,000, it was nothing like that. Every pro bodybuilder, except for the really elite, they didn't make any money, right? I had a real job. So that made it less desirable to be a pro bodybuilder. I just like, it would be cool to be in a magazine. But I wasn't against it. But I remember I said to her, I go, would I have to take steroids? And she just laughed again. Of course you have to take steroids. And she had a person who was a doctor or something like that, right? Because it was quasi-illegal. It wasn't a controlled substance at that time, right? And I wasn't against that. You know, I read the magazines for a year. It wasn't something like it is now. Oh, bad, bad, bad. You take steroids, right? I wasn't against that. But the next question I said, I go, how much do steroids cost, right? And this is the funny thing. She said $500 a month or something like that. And I went, look, I want to show after 13. I'm not going to spend $500 for steroids, right? It wasn't that big allure to me being in my position. Here's another key thing. Natural contests started right at that time. And I was winning them right from the beginning. There was a wrap. A couple years later, Ironman magazine, had a whole NPC national contest that were drug tested. Team Universe started a couple of years after that. Muscle Mania on TV. I'm on TV. I was getting duly rewarded for what I was doing, right? So it was a chain of events. I was getting everything that I wanted out of it. And so here's the other thing to you. I'm not quite so sure that if you're a good natural bodybuilder and then you take steroids, I'm not so sure that makes you a superstar. And let me, if you can look back, and I don't know if you know who, there's been a lot of natural bodybuilders. You know Kai Greene's story. He was a natural body. He was awesome. And then he turned into Kai Greene. But there's a lot of stories of guys that kind of did it and they just, nothing really came out of it. Maybe they competed as a pro. I don't think taking steroids makes you the top echelon or anything like that. So, I mean, that's my story. That's the conditions. I think I got a lot out of this. I think I got a lot out of my bodybuilding career than guys who took steroids. It's like what you value, right? I didn't value IFBB. I love passion and do what I love to do. You know, I didn't have, you know, a lot of certain, you know, I always had a decent body, so it wasn't like I was a skinny guy that wanted to be big, right? We all have our unique things, what we value and what we don't value. But I think it's a combination of, oh, and let me get back to that one woman. At that time, her connection got arrested because it just crossed over for a controlled substance, and that was her source to send bodybuilders. Well, he got arrested. So, oh, there's one more factor. One, my first mentor, right? And I didn't know him when he was a bodybuilder, but he loved training. He's still training. He's a trainer in the gym. You know, I just saw him not too long ago. But he had major medical problems. He and his wife were mixed pairs national champions at AAU and had a small pinhole or something in his kidney that made him uninsurable, caused a lot of financial things. So that was a great guy, my first mentor. So I think all of those factors or my unique situation, why it just wasn't that attractive. I was getting really rewarded being me. So I know that situation is probably so unique to me. I don't know what anybody can learn from it, but it's really what you value. You know what I mean?
Skip, I think the main reason for Steve's question is we live in a society now where everyone wants everything yesterday, you know, and one thing that really depresses me is, you know, a lot of 18-year-olds are starting steroids and they've never even purchased a gym membership yet. Or, I mean, they've been working out 2 months and they're already planning out their first cycle. So, I mean, it's really refreshing to see someone train their entire life and not even be tempted to take those things, you know?
Yeah, you know, there's one thing I just want to give you some things to consider. Sometimes we believe our world, we start seeing that everybody is that way, right? You know, that's 70-80% of people in the gym. I think that number, I don't see that, right? But I also know what I achieved with my body drug-free. I hung around some of the best drug-free bodybuilders over my time. I might have a different perception of when I didn't always have this. Let me just tell you, in my second year, after I won those little bitty shows, right? So I was accomplished. People thought I was on drugs from 6 months of training, okay? I went to this Gold's Gym down the street, and everybody there, it seemed ripped and tan. It was so intimidating for me. And it wasn't they were huge. You know, they just looked so great, and they lifted a lot more than me. I had to stop training at that gym. It was so demoralizing, right? I look back now, they're just older guys who just train a lot of years, right? This is a true story. This is how naive, it was probably within my first couple of years, I already won those local shows. And I remember I had this girlfriend at the time, she's really funny and sarcastic, right? And I remember watching this guy, he wasn't big and ripped. He was, you know, had some size, but he was like a bulker guy. And he went to the squat rack, right? And remember, I'm a 28-year-old man witnessing this, right? And he got 315 pounds on the squat rack. And I don't know, he didn't do something outrageous, maybe like 10 reps or something like that. And I remember she was going, we were looking at each other, roid boy, right? So I started off with a belief system just like everybody else, no matter how good I was. I didn't start like, oh, you could do whatever, right? I had my limiting beliefs too, but I just opened my mind. I progressed more and more. See, I don't think, I don't know. It's just not my belief that 70-80% of guys are walking in the gym using steroids. I don't think they care enough about their muscle to do that, right? You know, and to say a generation of people, you know, maybe there are people like that, but you seem like a really hard focus guy. You're not some generation, whatever they call it. What is this, Generation X or Y or whatever, right? You're willing to do the work. What is it? What
generation?
Okay. But you're willing to do the work when it comes to school to build that foundation, right? You're not looking for shortcuts the fast way, right? When it comes to school in your life.
Trevor used steroids when he was 18. Yeah,
but what I'm saying, it's not universal of people in this area, right? Well, that, you know, because whatever reasons, right? We all have our things. Sometimes we believe that everybody is like us because we're smart, we're well thought out. But I'll tell you, everybody's got this own story going on in their head, their fears, their beliefs, right, that get them to do stuff. And it's true, a lot of us congregate, we have similar backgrounds, and maybe I kind of, by what I revealed, hey, you know, maybe I kind of made you kind of aware of things. Hey, I never made that connection that we generally are here. But, you know, I don't know. I don't talk to people about that. So that's just not my world, right? There's, you know, some of the things that I shared here, there's some of the things I talk to guys and they go, I don't know what you're talking about. That's not my world, right? So, you know, we all come from our own perspective, right? Makes sense?
So Skip, we're already past our hour, so I'm gonna close up the show. Okay. The reason I personally took steroids when I was 18 is, you know, I love bodybuilding. I did my first show when I was 15 years old. Uh-huh. And when I was 18, I hired a coach. And he basically told me that, you know, the only way I was going to turn pro was to use steroids, you know, and, you know, anyone who really loves bodybuilding, you know, that's kind of their end goal. And, you know,
so wait, let me just stop you there. That's not everybody's goal.
That was my goal. Sorry.
Right. Okay. But it's that generality that everybody who starts with bodybuilding wants, you know, I still don't cherish that. I want an IFBB pro guard from Team Universe. See, that's the whole thing. You're doing your motivation, what drove you, which I totally respect. But everybody doesn't come from the same world, right? I didn't lock in on a pro card. I'm telling you, the guys who I saw were pros, they weren't winners, and they didn't have great lives. I had a much more stable life. I never cherished being an IFBB pro the way you saw it, right? And it'll take me down a different route. Anyway, I don't
You gave our listeners a lot of stuff to think about.
Right.
I mean, when I was 18, I just thought IFBB pro, there's some pot of gold, you know, once I get
right.
Now looking back, being 25, I would have told myself, hey, most IFBB pros, it means nothing. They're still working a day job. You know, it's exactly like you said, unless you're Phil Heath, unless you're Kai Green, you're still working a 9-to-5 job. An IFBB pro card doesn't mean anything, especially nowadays. You know, if you look at people of the biggest social media following, it's Rich Piana, it's Paige Hathaway, you know, it's people who have never even, who don't even really compete.
They offer value, they offer emotion, and they just happen to be in fitness. And that's what people want most, not your accomplishments. They want some emotion from you. Right?
They want to get to know you. They want your personality. Yeah.
Right.
Skip, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Keep doing what you're doing. I love the fact that, you know, you've transitioned from being that trainer, you know, where you talk about, you know, nutrition, diet, supplements, training, to now you're talking about the mindset of being a champion, what all goes into it. And listening to your podcast has really given me a lot of self-reflection. So I just want to say, keep doing what you're doing. It's helping a lot of people, and it's refreshing to see a different edge, because I truly believe the mind shapes a reality, you know, and positive thinking leads to positive results. Negative thinking leads to negative results.
So I really appreciate the kind words. I really appreciate being on your podcast too. I feel as though we just kind of scratched the surface on so
it's
many
really over deep. An hour. I know it's crazy.
Yeah.
So all of our listeners who are listening on iTunes or just through the sound, this will also be uploaded on YouTube. So if you go on the Evolutionary Radio Facebook or YouTube channel, you can find the link for that.
Awesome.
For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for our special guest, Skip LaCour, and for my co-host, Steve Smee, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it.
Thank you.